Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello?
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Rossafari Zoo News, your look at everything going on in the worlds of zoos, aquariums, conservation, and general animal weirdness. I'm going to start off today with kind of the standard spiel that we throw in sometimes. So don't forget to hit subscribe. Don't forget to make sure you're following along on the socials at Rossafari or at Rossafari Pod on the TikTok machine. And remember that you can tag me in Zoo News stories or email them to me, rossafaripod@gmail.com. And I'll say your name at the end of the episode. You'll get to hear that with me saying names right at the end of this episode, should you make it that far. And I hope you do, because we've got a lot of cool zoo newsy stuff to talk about this week. However, as y'all know, I like to start off by sharing a little bit about what's been going on in my world recently. This one's going to be a bit longer of a story, and it's not the happiest story. It does involve some dog cruelty, obviously not by me or anyone in my sphere. But I just wanted to give a bit of a trigger warning in case you want to skip ahead to the Zoo News section. I totally understand. So this week, I'm going to be telling you the tale of Logan. Now, Logan was a dog who very briefly was fostered by Zoe and I. And this was a very unexpected thing, and there is a reason you have not heard about it on the podcast. But now that the saga is over, I wanted to share it with y'all. So Logan was a 13-year-old German Shepherd, and Logan was found in a wheelbarrow in the back of a van that had been stolen. I should probably say allegedly stolen, but the person admitted they stole it, so whatever. They're going to be in jail and probably won't hear this anyway, you know, if all goes according to plan. Logan was found severely emaciated and unable to walk. And so was taken to the emergency hospital where Zoe is a vet. And they gave Logan much needed life-saving treatment. And Zoe approached me about medically fostering Logan to see if he could get better. Let me tell you a little bit about what Logan was like. When I first got home to see Logan there, I mentioned that he couldn't walk. Well, he was so emaciated that he was around 33 pounds when we got him. Now, this is a 13-year-old German Shepherd, so should have been around 70, maybe even a little bit more, but he was 33 pounds. You could see every rib in startling detail. He also was suffering from neurologic symptoms. He was neurologically inappropriate, as I'm told it is said. And that was likely from a thiamine deficiency from being starved nearly to death. And this presented in a couple different ways. He had a really hard time walking. He could barely even stand on his own. You'd kind of have to lean him against things or carry him, or we had this thing, help him up harness, where I could grab a handle kind of near the front of his back and another one down near kind of by his butt and lift him, and he could take steps kind of, but I was the one supporting his weight. It was really bad. And then going along with that, his head would just bob constantly. If you've ever seen Michael J. Fox or anybody with Parkinson's disease, it was startling how similar this was to what I've seen of that. I've seen a lot of things, y'all, but this was genuinely one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen pertaining to an animal. It was truly heartbreaking. Logan, despite all of that, was actually a very good boy. He loved people, and he loved Paradiddle and Flam. He would get so excited when he would see them playing, and Flam would frequently go up and give him little kisses, and when they would start a tug or whatever, even though he couldn't get close to it, his tail would start wagging, he would get all excited, and he really loved being loved on by humans. He would love it when we'd go give him a cuddle or some pets. That tail would just get going. But it was a challenge. You know, we would feed him, and the diet was very much structured to help him kind of learn how to eat food again because he was so emaciated. And anytime he would have to go out, he would bark. He was potty trained, which is amazing to me. And he would bark. And it was, I mean, again, when we're talking about a German Shepherd, bark is a strong word. It kind of sounded like if he had lost his voice and also gone up a couple octaves. It was very raspy and quiet and kind of high pitched, but it was a bark, and he would do that whenever he had to go out, and we could go and grab the harness and lift him up and take him outside and make sure that the way that he was standing or falling or leaning, that he wouldn't pee on you or poop on you. It was a challenge. But I can say that I only got peed on once and didn't get pooped on at all. And I'm actually pretty proud of that. He did get my shoe pretty good one time, though. Not going to lie. But yeah, there are some studies out there that show that giving certain vitamins and everything can actually reverse some of those neurologic symptoms. So we were hopeful that things would be okay with Logan, but it ended up not being the case. We saw some growth. We saw some improvement. The head bobs slowed down, and there were times that he could even almost stand on his own for a couple seconds at a time, or even a couple minutes at a time. But then things really took a turn for the worse. There was a night where he was not doing well in the stomach department. I was home alone with Logan, and I had to take him out over 40 times that night. And each time he had massive diarrhea. Well, at first it was massive, then there was nothing left, and it was kind of just farts and little squirts. But he kept needing to, I got to tell you, kind of, even though he was only 30 some pounds, holding him and having to lean over to do that because of his height and everything, it was honestly, I can say, one of the hardest nights that I have ever had. But don't get me wrong, I'm glad that I was able to be there for him. I'm glad that Zoe and I were able to show him love and affection and give him food and let him know that his needs would be met when we, you know, were needed in that way. But in the end, he just not only didn't recover, but he took a turn for the worst. And the decision was made to humanely euthanize Logan. And it's a heartbreaking thing. I will say that his owner is being charged with felony level animal abuse, along with the whole getting in trouble for, you know, stealing a van thing. And I am so grateful to the authorities for making sure that, this person was charged. I'm not sure yet what impact Logan will have had on me, if any, long term. But short term, it was such an interesting experience. It was harrowing and hard and challenging and heartbreaking, but also rewarding and filled with love and emotional in good and bad ways. And I'm just really grateful to have had the chance to make the end of his life so much better than whatever he had faced for however long before that. So thanks for listening. I know this went really long, but Logan was a very good boy, and I was very grateful to have gotten to have a positive impact at the end of his life. Logan, buddy, you are missed, and I'm so sorry that some human did that to you. All right, let's get to it with a parody song that absolutely does not fit the tone that we just set here. All right, so Logan was kind of our deep dive this week, and we're going to get to births and deaths here in a second. But first, I have to issue a correction from last week, and I'm so embarrassed about this. But Luna, the red panda who passed away and was the oldest ever in the North American SSP, in my obituary for Luna, and again, I was pretty emotional, but I mentioned her age, and I don't know if I just misread what I had written or if my head was just, I don't know. It was hard to talk about that, honestly. I loved Luna so much. But Luna was 22 years and 9 months old at the time of her passing. And when I gave her obituary, I misspoke and I said that she was 29 years and 9 months old. And I think I just put the nine from the months and the years. I don't know. But I do apologize for that mistake. And I'm grateful to the people who pointed it out to me. And please, if you ever hear me misspeak or make a mistake, especially on Zoo News, but in any episode, please let me know. I'm happy to go back and correct it or at least mention it like I am here because, you know, I want this to be right. But I am human. I make mistakes. And sometimes I'm also quite emotionally invested in these stories. So, yeah. Anyway, but Luna at 22 years and 9 months old was still just the most incredible animal at an insanely old age. And we miss the queen every day. So moving on to our births for the week, our friends at Zoo Atlanta have announced the hatching of a tawny frogmouth chick. Now, while the mother of the chick, named Mama, has produced numerous chicks, this is the first birth for Barkley, the father. And this is actually the first time Barkley has been paired with another tawny frogmouth, as he was an ambassador animal at a different facility for many years. And I love to hear that, as I think many zoos think of their ambassador collection as separate from their breeding animals. But there is movement in the industry to both retire animals from ambassador programs to let them breed, and also to even allow breeding within ambassador programs. And I'm a big fan of just all of that. The Memphis Zoo has announced the birth of a 6-foot-tall, 150-pound baby meerkat. No, I kid. It's a baby giraffe, which makes sense at the whole 6-foot-150 thing. But the giraffelet is named Fitz and is doing super well. And speaking of meerkats, but, you know, actual meerkats this time, the Sydney Zoo has announced the arrival of 3 meerkat pups to first-time parents Camille and Uzuri. The family regularly forms cuddle puddles together, and honestly, it's adorable. So last week, we mentioned that Zoo Tampa had welcomed an adorable baby tapir. Well, this week, the zoo announced the birth of another incredible species, a pygmy hippo calf, born to Zaza, who is an experienced mother that is doing a great job raising the baby. Now, I've talked on the pod recently about the fact that pygmy hippos often don't see a lot of breeding successes in human care, but this is the 5th birth for the team at Zoo Tampa, so congrats to them on all of their success. Our friends at the Akron Zoo have announced the birth of a Humboldt penguin chick that was actually sent to the zoo from the Columbus Zoo when it was an egg. The chick is incredibly valuable, genetically speaking, and is being fostered by a pair named Pez and Gabriella, who have a successful track record with raising chicks, including fosters. So yay for the birth and yay for the SSP for making sure that this panglet gets the best care by amazing foster parents. And of course, by the amazing Akron Zoo. That goes without saying. The Denver Zoo has announced the birth of a male lesser kudu. The baby has been introduced to the rest of the herd already, and along with integrating well, he is described as extra bouncy, which I think is a wonderful trait for a kudu to have. The Pottawatomie Zoo has announced the birth of a new black and white colobus monkey. These monkeys, interestingly enough, are born with pink skin and white hair and develop the traditional black and white coloration of the species over the first few months of life. Mother Moha is doing well with the baby, and since they keep their babies held close to their chest, she's on exhibit, so you actually have the chance to see the baby with mom when you visit the zoo. The Metro Richmond Zoo has welcomed twin ring-tailed lemurs. Their mother, Chili, is doing a great job with them, and because they are primates, same as last story, they can also be seen on exhibit already. Hammerton Park Zoo has announced the birth of a male maned wolf pup. Guests had noticed that the maned wolves hadn't been visible for a while, and now they know why. It is an absolutely adorable reason why as well. So congrats to the team there on the birth of the wolflet. And then last but not least in the births section this week, the London Zoo has made international news for welcoming three Asiatic lion cubs. Now, some of you may be thinking, wait, Asiatic lions? Aren't lions from Africa? And yes, African lions are from Africa, but there are Asiatic lions as well. And they traditionally lived in Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Iran, Mesopotamia, Pakistan, and India, but are now limited to a single national park and the areas around it in India. The species can't be seen in U.S. zoos, though there used to be a few examples around the country, but there's actually all this weird controversy about whether they were true Asiatics or hybrids or whatever. But they can be found in some zoos in other parts of the world. And to give you an idea on the population in the wild, it's estimated to be under 700 total animals. So this birth is an especially big deal. Congrats to the London Zoo. And that brings us to our deaths for the week. And we start off with the loss of another legendary red panda this week as we say goodbye to Tilly, who lived her life at the Hertfordshire Zoo in the UK. Tilly was a beloved red panda who became extra famous when she gave birth to Tashi, her last of the five cubs she had during her life. Tashi was known as the Miracle Panda because Tilly and her mate Nam Peng had been together for 4 years without successfully breeding, and then shortly after Nam Peng passed away, Tashi was born. This made him famous, along with the fact that he has one white paw to go along with his three standard black ones. Now, Tilly was known for being great at training and developed deep relationships with her keepers. She passed away at the age of 12, geriatric for a red panda, but still relatively young for one in human care. Tilly had suffered from many health challenges in her life and wouldn't have made it even close to 12 if not for the incredible care the keepers and vet staff were able to provide her. She will be deeply, deeply missed by those who cared for her and by her international fans. And while he wasn't as famous as Tilly, we said goodbye to another red panda this week. Burma, who lived at the Miller Park Zoo, has passed away. Burma had health issues related to his adrenal glands, similar to Addison's disease in dogs. And this type of condition makes those suffering from it extremely susceptible to external stressors. And after only a few days of treatment, he was found deceased one morning when staff arrived. It is extremely likely that he became stressed about something overnight, and the adrenal issue caused him to pass away from the stress. Burma was known for being grumpy and impatient, and fully expected to be hand-fed his favorite foods. But despite these traits, or perhaps because of them, he was a favorite amongst zoo staff, and they have been incredibly affected both by the diagnosis and then by the quick passing of such a great animal, sending all the love to the team. And another really painful loss comes from the Cincinnati Zoo, where 12-year-old snow leopard Nubo passed away unexpectedly. Making the loss even harder is the fact that preliminary necropsy results were inconclusive, so no one is really sure what happened yet. Though, hopefully, the further testing done as part of a necropsy will give the team an answer. Snow leopards can live to over 20 years old in human care, so while 12 would be a common age for a snow leopard to pass in the wild, this was just a huge shock to the team. Sending all my love to the Night Hunters team and the vet staff at the Cincinnati Zoo. I hope they are able to get answers and reach some level of peace after this seriously, seriously painful loss. Nubo was awesome. Zoo Miami has said goodbye to Katsu, the last remaining dole at the zoo. Doles, also known as Asiatic wild dogs, are really amazing animals that you won't see at a lot of facilities, but I know they have them at the Wilds and the Bronx Zoo. It's really sad to hear that Zoo Miami has now said goodbye to the species, but I'm grateful Katsu had such a great life at such an amazing facility. And then last but not least in this section this week, the new zoo and adventure park has said goodbye to Laha, a sheep that was part of the children's zoo and was also involved in a feeding experience there. Laha was a very good boy, known for his extremely gentle nature and for seeming to really love interacting with very young children. I'm sure that his nature and love of children has had a huge impact on all the kids and adults that got to interact with him and welcome him into their hearts. The children's zoo just won't be the same without him. And now moving on from deaths, we get to the rest of our zoo news. And to most people, this story wouldn't be big enough to lead off zoo news, but it is to me. Henry Vilas Zoo has announced that a red panda named Betty has moved to the zoo from the Lincoln Children's Zoo and is a breeding match for my best panda buddy, Bandit. For those that are newer listeners, Bandit was born at the Columbus Zoo, and I had the pleasure of spending much time with him from when he was a cub all the way up to when he moved to Wisconsin, quickly building the best relationship I'd had with a zoo animal to that point. Now, last year, when I was gigging out kind of near Wisconsin, I hopped in my car and drove a few hours to go catch up with Bandit and feed him some apples and such. It was such a treat to see my little guy again. And now to see that he has a partner is so exciting for me. The zoo has shown photos of the two getting along famously. So here's hoping that Bandit will be a dad soon. How incredible would that be? All right, so this last week saw eclipse fever hit the U.S. as a total solar eclipse was visible in parts of the nation, including me being able to see it from my front yard. And y'all, it was awesome. If you didn't get to see totality, even if you were at like 98%, it's just not the same thing. I highly recommend traveling at some point in your life to experience totality if you missed it this time. The sudden onset of night and then the sudden return of the day is incredible. It's like time speeds up compared to like when you see a sunrise or sunset. And not to mention that the actual, you know, view of the eclipse itself was incredible. It was super cloudy here in Buffalo, but the clouds parted right when the eclipse hit and I got to see it. It was really special. But the reason I'm mentioning this in zoo news and not in, you know, John news is that many zoos that were in the path of totality or very close to it did research into the reactions their animals had to the eclipse. And in general, the findings were similar to what I told you had been recorded previously. Some primates and birds got pretty worked up. Some others started to line up as though it was time to go in for the night. And most of the animals just ignored it. But I really liked that the zoos were doing the research, and I really liked the fact that some zoos opened up a citizen scientist type project for people visiting the zoo during the event, asking guests to record any behaviors they saw that might be different and unique. What a cool way to not only get more data, but to, you know, include zoo guests in a meaningful way. I thought that was very cool to see. Taronga Western Plains Zoo has officially opened the world's largest purpose-built platypus conservation center. The building combines a research center, rescue and rehabilitation facilities, and a pre-release area designed to help reacclimate platypuses to the wild. This is such a very cool and necessary thing, and is now also on my ever-growing list of places I desperately want to go to in Australia. And keeping it in international news for a moment, while there have been indications from China that the panda diplomacy plan will continue with the promise of giant pandas returning to San Diego and the belief they will return to the National Zoo in Washington, D.C. as well, China is still in the process of calling home the remaining pandas out in the world as their leases expire. The latest to be sent to China is Princess Fu, a giant panda that was born at Everland Theme Park in South Korea. The zoo had a huge farewell party for her, as is often the case, and her arrival to China is said to have gone well. Princess Fu will be joining a breeding program in China, but will be greatly missed in South Korea. And continuing to see pandas be called home, even with the promise of new ones going out, is just, I don't know, it's just weird. It seems like it's a weird time for the whole international giant panda community, but hopefully there's the positive result we think we're going to see. Woodland Park Zoo recently posted an incredible video about a dog named Fury. Fury is a Belgian Malinois scent detection dog that helps conservationists in Malaysian forests track down poachers that are trying to kill tigers. The deep forest is an incredibly harsh environment, but Fury navigates it perfectly. The humidity and climate in the area actually preserve scents for as long as a week or even 2 weeks. So Fury is able to track with a 98% success rate, which is absolutely incredible. And while the work is amazing, Fury is still just a dog. And so Fury gets rewarded with playtime, with a favorite Kong toy, and often gets to swim as well. So basically, Fury is a very good dog who is helping save tigers thanks to a partnership between Panthera and Woodland Park Zoo. And I am here for it. I guess you could call me a Fury fanatic. And last but not least in zoo news this week, the Cincinnati Zoo is asking people to sign a petition asking the Biden administration to take part in the Global Plastics Treaty. Please consider getting involved by signing the petition at salsalabs.org, which is open until April 15th. I'll put the link in the show notes, don't worry. The zoo is hoping to reach a goal of 200 signatures that are obtained because of the zoo, and I would love the Raw Safari community to be a big part of that. It only takes a second to sign, and it would mean a lot to me, the Cincinnati Zoo, and wildlife everywhere. Oh, and if you do sign the petition, and you should, please let me know so I can share our numbers with the zoo for their tracking purposes. Thanks.
Stereotypical Animal Podcast theme song. Here to bring you to conservation news.
So, on this podcast, you'll often hear me and other people, guests and stuff, use the terms charismatic species and non-charismatic species, which truly have very little to do with personalities and basically break down into cute and cuddly versus slimy and creepy crawly. Although y'all know I love plenty of animals that fit into the traditionally non-charismatic category. One of the groups most frequently accused of being non-charismatic are reptiles, but a new article in Discovery Magazine is hoping to change that. It turns out that new studies are showing that many reptile species are actually very social and are also very emotional. And I'm not just talking about the teenagers of the species. Apparently, reptiles actually experience a high range of emotions, though they don't exhibit them in ways that humans, or even most other mammalian or avian species, do. So we are just now starting to understand this. And even when studying these emotions and the social structures of reptiles, which are deeper than people have believed, researchers often have problems because of how secretive the animals can be and the fact that sometimes populations literally just like disappear for months at a time and then resurface. But it is important to understand the emotional and social structures of reptiles, because the understanding can help make people care about reptiles more, make them seem more charismatic, and hopefully it'll help to fill the current gap in funding between reptile conservation efforts and those of birds and mammals, which are by and large much better funded. All right, so I'm curious to know if you have heard about Molly the magpie and her best friend, Peggy. Sounds like a cartoon. But this is actually an interesting story that I think has some conservation ramifications I want to touch on. So Molly is a magpie that was found by an Australian family when it was a fledgling. They found it on the ground, and assuming it had fallen from a nest, which might have not been an accurate assumption, took it home and, quote, rehabilitated it. The family dog, a terrier named Peggy, quickly took to the bird, and a unique relationship formed between the two. The relationship went viral, with people calling it a real-life Winnie the Pooh-type situation, and the Department of Environment, Science, and Innovation in Queensland heard about it and confiscated the bird, as it had been taken from the wild and kept unlawfully with no permit, license, or authority. By the time the family surrendered the bird to the government, they had amassed millions of followers on social media and even secured a book deal. People online petitioned the government to return the bird, and now Premier Stephen Miles stepped in to grant the couple the necessary licenses so the bird can return home, despite the family not being qualified to have the bird in their care. And look, I'm not going to get into the online debate about this. There are a whole lot of people who haven't followed this story properly who are misrepresenting facts, and a whole lot of people who are doing the equivalent of sticking their fingers in their ears and saying, "I can't hear you, la la la," when presented with the problems of this situation. But if you're a fan of this podcast, I'll trust that you understand why this bird should not be living with this family and certainly not be friends with this dog. What stands out to me, though, is that this is the first time I can think of where a government has decided in favor of pressure from social media fans instead of deciding for the welfare of an animal in a case like this. And that's alarming to me. Now, magpies are a species that is rated of least concern on the IUCN Red List, but they are a protected species in Australia. If the government is willing to look the other way this one time, what else would they accept? Can I go grab a tree kangaroo and a platypus out of the wild and make them TikTok stars and keep them? No, seriously, can I? Because I really want a tree kangaroo and I'm kidding. Tree kangaroos and platypuses and wild animals, even like magpies, are not pets. You know that. I know that. We all know that. But it makes me wonder, will this encourage other people to grab magpies when they see them? Magpies can actually spend time on the ground when they are fledging, so there is no reason to believe that Molly or any other magpie other people may find needed help. This is just a weirdly dangerous precedent, and the fact that it is like streaming from social media and pressure from social media fans just doesn't sit right with me. Animal welfare and conservation and laws that exist to protect animals should not be able to bend to that crap. Yeah, this one's not great, y'all. But all right, let's move on to a different story. All right, so we all know that I think taxonomy is weird, but it's always worth looking at and trying to understand. Well, now it turns out there may be a new species of orca out there. not like that we discovered a new species, but that some of the orcas we already know about might actually be a different species. Again, taxonomy is weird. Basically, up until now, all orcas have been thought to be one species, Ursinus orca, with many types under the species umbrella. However, researchers now believe that the differences seen in killer whales in the Puget Sound are so much larger than other orcas, and the animals exhibit other characteristics not seen in any other orcas, that they should be classified as a separate species. The Society of Marine Mammalogy's Taxonomy Committee will soon vote on the proposal, and if it passes, the designation will be made in the coming months. The new species would be known as Ursinus rectipinnis, a name that makes me giggle, but that is Latin-based, with recti meaning upright and pinna meaning fin. Rectipinnis. And while I think this is an interesting fact in and of itself, it does have serious conservation consequences, as it will mean the population of Ursinus orca is smaller than currently believed, and the conservation status of Ursinus rectipinnis will have to be determined, with all that implies for the conservation work required for both species. Still, I have to say that the idea of people sitting around and voting on whether these animals are a new species or the same species is just so weird to me. It's such a human-centric way of doing things, though I guess that's really the only way we can do things as humans. I don't know. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Taxonomy is really weird to me. And last but not least in conservation news this week, we keep talking about avian influenza and how it seems to be spreading in a new species. Well, the latest one, coming a whole week after we discussed how it is infecting pinnipeds and cows and even a human now, is goats. Well, a goat, anyway. A goat in Minnesota has now tested positive for the disease. And, you know, sometimes I hear stories like this and think it might just be a weird outlier, and other times I can't help but wonder what impact these years of bird flu will end up having on all the animals we love. In other news. All right, so we have one interesting story in other news this week. A massive sperm whale was swimming off the coast of Western Australia recently when it found itself being attacked by a pod of orcas. Now, hard to say what species it was and whether it might have been a rectipinnis attacking a sperm whale, which seems weird. But I digress. No, seriously, though. The sperm whale, which was in a pod, actually avoided predation when it and its pod started voluntarily releasing feces at the orcas and then swishing their tails, creating confusion for the predators. The first time this self-defense mechanism has ever been observed in sperm whales. Now, sperm whales mostly eat squid, so they have a very gross red poop. And whether it was the color or the smell or what, the orcas were deterred. And I want to be clear, this was like serious defense work by the sperm whales. This was not just random whales pooping randomly. They actually huddled in a circular formation, heads to the center, tails and butts out, and started pooping and spreading it with their tails. The entire pod of orcas fled immediately when the poop burst forth. Defensive defecation. Who knew?
Animal, animal, animal holidays. Animal, animal, animal holidays.
All right, and that brings us to our animal holidays for the week. April is Ape Awareness Month and National Frog Month. And then for the week we have Friday, April 12th is World Hamster Day. The 14th is National Dolphin Day, which seems a little late as March was Dolphin Awareness Month. I can only assume scientists wanted to grab them a day in April as well, since they knew people would be focused on my birthday all of last month. April 16th is Save the Elephant Day, and the 17th is National Crawfish Day and Bat Appreciation Day. And those are your animal holidays for the week. But also a quick reminder to go to penguinsinternational.org or to their social media pages, because it's about time to vote for the final round of Penguins International's March of the Penguin Madness. And don't forget to look for the commentary that I've been doing for each round. I'll be dropping a new one of those soon. So yeah, good times, good holidays, and yay, Penguins! So there you have it, folks. Another episode of Ross Safari Zoo News. Yay! I'd like to say thank you to my Red Panda level patrons, Dr. Laura Schenk, Dr. Stephen Williamson, Barbara Bennett, and Jenny Owens. And I'd like to thank everyone who contributed to the episode this week, including Anya Keen, Colleen Lenihan, Kim Cooley Croninger, Carrie Kirkpatrick, Kevin Williams, Emily Rockbuck, Anne Yoshioka, Jacob Zinn, Melissa Reed, Dr. Laura Schenk, Elizabeth Dunleavy, Sam Evans, Jay Meredith, Dr. Zoe Rossi, Matt Patford, Kay Malensky, Ali Malensky, the Malenskys, Marianne Rossi, my mommy, Becca Robinson, Rowena White, and Kristen Khalil. Thank you all so much for contributing. We'll be back here Tuesday with a new interview episode. And hey, don't forget, friends, the words Newsy credits backwards are Steiderkiswen.
The Ross Safari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Ross Safari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Ross Safari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.
And now Premier Stephen Miles. Holy crap, I just read Mills instead of Miles, and that's my son's name. Brilliant work.